Rafui Shleiman, for Yeshuas, for all of Klal Yisrael and the world all over. And I want to wish everyone a good Chodesh. Of course, tonight is the first of the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, and we'll try to maybe connect a little bit at the end of the Parsha Shir to Adar Sheni and the mitzvah or the idea of adding Simcha to this time of the year, and of course with Purim coming up in 2 weeks from tonight, Emirat Hashem. So, but we'll start with the Parsha. Of course, this is a Parsha Shir, and Parshas Pekudei often doesn't get a lot of press because it's very often together with Vayakel. And, you know, let's be honest, it's also not the most exciting Parsha. It's a kind of a repeat of all the items that were collected by Moshe to build the Mishkan, and then it goes through specifically the Big Day Kahuna, and then at the very end, the Mishkan is finally complete to some degree. So it starts, and let me just share my screen. Give me 1 second here. You could follow along with the sources on the screen. Okay, everyone see it okay? Just give a thumbs up. Yeah, okay, great. Okay, so we'll start with the first pasuk. The first pasuk in the parsha, Eilu Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEidus, Asher Pukad Al Pi Moshe. So the word pakudei is—it's hard to really translate because there are so many different usages of the word pakad throughout Tanakh. But here, on the most simple level, it means the counting. So these are the counting; these are the accountings of the Mishkan Ha'edos. Of course, it was called the Mishkan Ha'edos. Rashi points out because the centerpiece of the Mishkan was the Edos, was the Luchos Edos that were in the Aron. Asher pukad al pi Moshe. So they were counted. Al Pi Moshe. So Al Pi Moshe means through the words of Moshe, which makes it sound like Moshe specifically commanded, so to speak. He demanded that there would be an accounting of all the materials. So we'll find out why very shortly. Avodas HaLeviim Biyadi Tamar Ben Aaron HaKohen. So the Mishkan was, of course, the Avoda of the Leviim. But why does it say Biyadi Tamar Ben Aaron HaKohen? Right? Aaron had a number of sons, and Itamar was, of course, one of them. So what was Itamar's special role with the Mishkan or with building the Mishkan? So what some of the commentaries point out is that it's saying that Itamar was actually in charge of the counting, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, it sounds like he made sure that there was an accounting of all the materials that were collected. And Itamar was the accountant. I was talking to a friend of mine. He's actually a friend and a chavrusa who's an accountant. Anyone here who's an accountant or anyone who knows an accountant knows that this is a busy time of year. So it's probably not a coincidence that we read Parshas Pekudei during this season, the season of accounting, that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to make sure there was an accounting of all the materials. So why was he so on top of this? And it wasn't just that he wanted to make sure there was an accounting. He got an auditor. He got Itamar ben Aaron to be the auditor to make sure that everything was accounted for, all the donations. So there's a very interesting halacha that's actually learned out from the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, it's learned out from other things as well, but this action of Moshe Rabbeinu is one of the sources to what the Bach points out in source 2. So the source is actually from the Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima was a great rabbi in the end of the 1800s, early 1900s, Rabbi Epstein, and he put together a lot of the Gemaras that connect to Psukim and a lot of the Halachos that connect to Psukim in this one work called Torah Tamima, which means the full Torah. So he quotes a Bach. A Bach is one of the classic poskim on the tour. So we see from this story, says the Torah Tamima, quoting the Bach, Mikan da afal pi shagabai tztaka hakasherim ein medaktikin achareihem. Even though we could trust the gabai tztaka, we could trust the men and the women in the community who are going around and collecting sincerely for those who are in need, so we trust them, but afilu hachi tov sheyitnu cheshbon. It's still good to make sure that there's some sort of accounting. Kamoshe Matsino b'Moshe Rabbeinu. The same way that Moshe, who no one would suspect Moshe was going to be pocketing some of all these donations, but even Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, Isamar, make sure that there's an accounting. So we see from that that a gabai tztaka really should also do the same thing. Kamoshe Namar Eilu Pekudei HaMishkan. So we see from the fact that Moshe made sure there was an accounting that even to this day, the gabai tztaka, someone who collects, there's always some oversight. There's always someone making sure that nothing is pocketed and all the money goes to the tzedakah that it's dedicated for. And the Midrash Tanchuma actually throws in some context to this. So it says, "V'lama asa cheshbon." Why did Moshe Rabbeinu feel it was necessary to go through this accounting? Hakadosh Baruch Hu ma'amino. Hashem himself, if God himself gives his stamp of approval on Moshe Rabbeinu, shenemar, b'chol beiti nemanhu, out of all people, he's the most trustworthy. So Moshe natan cheshbon? Like, why would Moshe have to go through this accounting and make sure that he wasn't keeping anything to himself? Everything was going to the Mishkan. Elam epnei sheshama leitzanei hador. There are always the leitzanim. There are always those scoffers, even to Moshe Rabbeinu, and as we know, this is not such a chiddush, it's not so novel, because throughout Moshe's life, there were always the scoffers and the doubters, like Korach and Dasam Ba'avirim, etc. So there were people that doubted him, and they said, and they actually quote a pasuk, Shenamar, Bahaya Kitseis Moshe, V'chule V'hibitu Achare Moshe. So I'm just going to jump to the next source, because the pasuk that the Midrash is quoting is that Bahaya Kitseis Moshe El Ha'ohel, this is Marsha's Kisisa, that when Moshe would leave his tent, Yakumu Kol Ha'am, everyone would stand up. They would get kavod to the Rav. The Nitzvu Ish Petach Ohalo, and they would look. They were, as he was walking by. So far, it sounds positive. V'hibitu Acharei Moshe Ad Bo Ha'ohal, and they would watch him until he would get back to his tent. So it sounds like a positive thing. It sounds like the same way when you see a great Rav, when you see Rabbi Kelmer Zatzal, you see any of the great Rabbanim, Rabbi Galler, any of the great Rabbanim we have in the community, you want to stand up for them, you want to watch them. There's a certain kavod. But that's not what the Midrash is actually saying, that when it says that they would watch him, they would look at Moshe until he returned to his tent, they would actually watch him because they suspected him. Some of the people, there were always the doubters that were like, Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't trust this guy. So they would watch him, says the Midrash. Umahaya Omrim, they would say, Rabbi Yitzchak Hayadorish L'Shavach V'Chareya Mishivo. So one person would say, oh, look at that Moshe Rabbeinu. What a leader. What a trustworthy leader we have. And then his friend would say to him, Reka, no, you fool. Adam Shanismana Amalechas Hamishkan Al Kikare Kesef Val Kikare Zahav Sha'imaham Khaker Velo Mishka Velo Minyan Ma Tarotse Shalya Ashir. Come on. Like, there's no way. He's collecting all this gold and silver and bronze, all these fancy precious stones. You think he's actually not gonna become rich off of this? So there's always the skeptics. So there's always the people who are doubting. And that's why Moshe said, Kishashama came, when Moshe heard this, Amar Chayechem. No, Mishenigmar Malechas Hamishkan Ani Nosan Lahem Cheshbon. I want to make sure I look. No one could have any tainas on me. No one could complain that maybe I pocketed some of the money, and that's why he did this Cheshbon. Kevin Shenigmar Amar Lahem Ela Pekudei Hamishkan. That's why Moshe said, I want to make sure that there's a Pekudei. I want to make sure that there's accounting. So I think what we're already seeing from Moshe Rabbeinu's actions is that, you know, there's a concept, there's an idea that I often talk about with my patients, especially those patients, you know, who I'm helping in psychotherapy, and I'm trying to help them not care so much about what other people think, because that's such a machla, it's such a difficult neurosis for people sometimes to get over, that they're always worried about what are people going to say, what are people going to think how I look, what are people going to think how I act, and on the one hand, you know, we have to be ourselves, and we don't have to care about what other people think. But at the same time, maybe specifically someone like Moshe Rabbeinu, or someone that you know is going to be watched, there's actually an idea of going out of your way to make sure you look super clean, you look super, you know, polished, and making sure that there's no one who could say that you're doing something wrong, in this case, that you're pocketing money, possibly. And this is actually brought down, you know, in many halachos. You may have heard of the concept of maris ayin, which basically means that we don't want people, even if we're not doing anything wrong, we don't want people to look at us and they'll think that we're doing something wrong. So we have to go out of our way to make sure that we look super clean. And that's what the Mishnah in Shkalim says in Source Hay. It says, Ein hatorim nichnas lo bapargod chapat v'lo b'minav lo b'sandal. So it's talking about when the person in charge of collecting the money, there was money donated, actually, of course, this time of year, we just read last week's Parsha Shkalim. So for the month of Adar, every family had to dedicate a half a shekel towards the Mishkan. And they would keep it at a certain chamber in the base of the Mikdash. So what it's saying is when the person who was in charge of going to the money and collecting the money would go in, he was not supposed to wear a cloak that had cuffs on the bottom. Velo minol, couldn't even wear shoes, velo sandal, couldn't even wear slippers. Why? Shema ya'ani, this maybe he's going to get poor. V'yomru me'avon ha'ishka ha'ani, maybe he did something shady and that's why he became poor. Maybe he stole some money. Or the other way, or shema ya'ashir, v'yomru mi'chumas ha'ishka ha'ashir. Or maybe he's going to get wealthy and then people are going to think that, oh, he got wealthy because he was pocketing some of the money. So that's why he wasn't even allowed to go in with cuffs on his pants or even go in with shoes, because people are going to say, oh, maybe he went in and snuck some gold coins into his cuff of his pants. Maybe he snuck something under his foot. So it's to that extent, which sounds kind of silly. But the Mishnah quotes a pasuk. It says, "Lafisha Adam Tzarech Latzeis Yedei Habrios Kederech Shetzarech Latzeis Yedei Hamakom." That the same way a person has to look good before Hashem, and Hashem is everywhere, so we can't hide from Hashem. We always have to be on our best behavior. Hashem's always looking. But the same way we have to look good for Hashem, we have to look good for others as well. Shenemar V'yisem Nikiyem Me Hashem Ume Yisrael. That we have to look clean from Hashem and from people. And this is based on the pasuk, I put it in Source Vav. This is a pasuk by the Shvatim of Reuven and Gad. I'm sure we all remember the story, that Reuven and Gad, they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to stay on the other side of the Jordan River is there a question? No? Okay. They didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to stay on the other side of the Yarden because the land was so fertile and they had a lot of cattle. So Moshe Rabbeinu actually said, you know what? We'll let you stay on this side of the Yarden as long as you come and help us conquer. And he says in Pasuk, Perek Lama Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis, V'nichbisha ha'aretz l'fnei Hashem. You could come help us conquer the land. V'achar tashuvu. But then you could go back and then you could have the other side of the Yarden. V'yisem nikiyem me Hashem me Yisrael. Because you have to look clean. You have to be clear for Hashem and for Bnei Yisrael. And it wouldn't look good if you're letting everyone else fight while you're just enjoying your land on the other side of the Yarden. You have your beautiful cattle, your beautiful land, while the rest of Klal Yisrael have to fight. It doesn't look good. And that's why Moshe says, V'yisem nikiyem. You have to look good, Me Hashem Ume Yisrael. And that's what the pasuk that's what the Mishnah and Shkalim was quoting. That we have an obligation. Again, even though it sounds kind of silly, why would he have to make sure no one thought he was stealing tzedakah money? He's a mensch. Of course, he's not going to steal tzedakah money. But we have to try as best as we can to look good because people are watching. And I think the message is not that we have to assume everyone is so skeptical and that everyone is always so suspicious. I think that's not the message. I think the message is that we have a responsibility and an opportunity that when other people are watching us, we have to make sure that other people see us doing things that look totally kosher, so that will make sure that others are also acting in that way. Because as we know, from a social psychology perspective, we all impact each other. And I think V'yisem Nikiyem, and what Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching us, is that we have the opportunity, you know, in a negative sense, for people to think that we're doing something wrong. So we have to look super clean so that we could make sure that that standard is always maintained. And the Midrash quotes another pasuk besides for V'yisem Nikiyem, a pasuk in Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech says, U'matzachein v'seichel tov b'nei Elokim ve'adam. Right? You may recognize this pasuk from benching, that we have to find favor and a good perspective, not just in the eyes of Hashem, but in the eyes of people also. And I think that's really the message that Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching us. And this is also the message that I think the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us. And the Mishnah in Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph. So it says, Rabbi Yudah Anasi taught us, Ezehu derech yisharet sheyavro lo ha'adam. What's the right path a person should take? Koshi teferes lo oseha, vit teferes lo min ha'adam. A person has to have splendor and look splendid, not just before Hashem, but also before people. And the Maharal Miprag has a beautiful explanation. We're not going to read the whole thing inside, but we could actually jump to the second bolded part. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines up where the mouse is. V'ha'ikar. It says, V'ha'ikar Shabbat Rebbe Lalamed. Shalo Yomar Ha'adam. A person should not say, And this is a very logical perspective, that I know I'm doing something right. So if I know I'm doing something right, malo librios, why do I care about what that guy might think? So the Maharal is saying, the Rebbe is coming to teach us that don't have that perspective, that we actually have to some degree, be concerned about what other people think. It says, "Bedavar ze'eno, ki ra'i shi'amasa ha'adam teferes min ha'adam zulaso." We have to look clean and splendid to other people as well. Kamo she'timtza b'chol makom b'dibri chachamim, she'asr lasos ma'isa she'anira she'udavar she'eno hagam l'ro'a. That we always have to make sure, and this is the concept, as I was saying before, of maris ayin, that we have a lot of halachos, so we're not going to go through any of them really, except for the one about the shkalim, but that we have an obligation, from a halachic perspective, to look kosher and to make sure that when we're doing things, we try to maintain that perception, that everyone could see that we're doing it appropriately. And especially if you're actually not doing something that's appropriate, that of course will have a negative impact on others as well. And the part that we skipped, I'll just say it outside, he says it's especially true when it comes to someone who's in a position of leadership, and someone like Moshe Rabbeinu, because as we all know, we're so quick to be impacted through the actions of each other, but especially if someone who we consider on high regard and they're doing something that looks a little bit shady, it definitely has even more of an impact on those watching. And that's why, those in positions of leadership, of course, it comes with a tremendous abilities to help and to have a positive influence. One of the challenges is that there's usually some extra scrutiny because of that powerful position. So that is an important message I think we see from this parsha, but almost like in the negative, to make sure no one thinks you're doing something wrong. But I think we also see this in this parsha, in these parshios, in Vayakal and Pekudei, in the positive. And I want to show two sources that really bring this out. So the first is from last week's parsha, but it's a famous idea, that the pasuk says that when the Nesiim, who were the princes, every Shevet had a head of their Shevet, the princes, the Nesiim, heviu es avnei ha'shoam ves avnei ha'miluim la'ifod v'lachoshen. So the Nesiim were the last ones to bring their items. Before this pasuk, it mentions how Klai Yisrael brought their gold and their silver. The women brought their jewelry. They were all, everyone was donating. And then the Nesiim, it says, brought their Avnei Shoam, Avnei Miluim. So Rashi quotes the famous Midrash. I'll read it here. Amar Rabbi Nasan, Ma ro Nesiim les nadiv v'chanukas ha-mizbeach batzchila, u'b'melechas ha-mishkan lo esnadvu batzchila. So what the Midrash is pointing out, that in Parshas Naso, when it's the chanukas ha-mizbeach, when it's the inauguration, the Mishkan's already built, and they're inaugurating the Mishkan, the Nesiim were the first ones to bring their korbanos. So why over there, later on, the Nesiim were so quick to jump to be the first ones, but here they were the last ones. So it says the Rashi, quoting the Midrash, Elakach Amru Nesiim, Yesnadvu Tzibor, Mashin Misnadvin, the Tzibor will give whatever they give, Mashin Machastrim, Ana Mashlim Anoso, we'll give the leftovers. Kevin Sheshlimu Tzibor Esakol, but once they underestimated the giving nature of everyone else, and everyone gave everything, Shenemar v'halacha ha'isadayim, that the pasuk says that everything was already finished, Amru Nesiim, ma'aleinu lasos, what should we bring? So Yaviu es Avnei Hashon, they brought these precious stones that no one else even had access to, the Gemara talks about. They brought these precious stones that came from Shemayim because they had nothing else to give. So therefore, because they learned their lesson, and this time they almost missed out on being able to give, next time, they made sure to be the first ones when it came to giving the korbanos for the inauguration. But now the famous part, because they were lazy and they didn't give right away when it came to the Mishkan, if we just look back at the word Nesiim, it's usually with the Yud, between the Aleph and the Mem. Because they were lazy and they weren't quick to give, they lost the opportunity. So many commentators ask the question. They say, it doesn't sound so terrible that the Nesiim said, you know what, let everyone else give and we'll fill in the rest. Because a lot of times that's actually very helpful, right? You have all these, you know, very worthy organizations raising money, and they have this, you know, goal. They want to reach $1 million, they want to reach $100,000. And usually, I think, I'm not that I'm so involved in this world, but they usually have someone who says, let everyone, you know, raise the money, and whatever's left over, don't worry, I'll fill in. So if you raise $700,000, I'll kick in the last, you know, $300,000. So usually that's actually a nice thing. So why would the Nesi'im punish, so to speak? They were, their yud was taken out of their name because they had that perspective. So there are a number of answers given, but there's one answer I wanted to share from Moshe Sternbach, who's a great posek and a Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, in Har Nof. He was in South Africa before that for many years. So he says that the Nesi'im, maybe it was not the worst thing, that they said they'll fill in the rest. But what they missed out is they had an opportunity to inspire others to give. They were the Nesi'im. They were the princes of each Shevet. So what an impact it would have been if they were the ones to jump right away to want to donate. Everyone else would have said, oh, the Nesi'im are giving, I'm going to also give. So they missed out on an opportunity to inspire others and to model for others how to give. And that was why they were punished, even though they had the right intentions. But because they didn't jump on that opportunity, that's why they actually lost out. And there's a Ramban also that I think brings out the same exact idea. The Ramban in Shemos Lamed Hei Chaf Beis. So the Pasuk says, Vayavo ha'anashim al ha'anashim, kol nediv lev heviu chach, v'nezem, v'tabas, v'chumas, kol kli zahav, v'chol ish, asher heinif, tnufas zahav la'hashem. So it's saying men and women, all those whose hearts moved them, they made an elevation offering of gold to Hashem, and they list all these different jewelry, these type of items that were gold, and it says that they were waved before Hashem. So the Ramban points out that it only uses the word waving when it comes to gold. For every other donation, for the Zahav, for the Nechoshes, it uses the Lashon Heirim, which means just to lift up. That when they were donating it, they actually lifted up. But why by gold does it say that they waved it? So the Ramban says an amazing thing. So the Ramban says, Lo hayu rabim kerimime hakesef anachoshes. There weren't so many people bringing the gold. There were plenty of people bringing silver and bronze because that was cheaper and more people had it. But the hava zaha meruba kekesef anachoshes. Al ken tikra zet tnufa vizu truma. That's why specifically by the gold it says that it was waved. Ki amevi zahav yenufa fiyado lachashivas hanadava. Because when a person brought gold, that was an extra special nedava. That was a real precious gift. So they would wave it. O halokim yanifu hazav laroso l'shabeach hamevi al nedvaso. So they would want to praise. They would want to show how great it was that this person brought gold. This person gave the extra donation, and they wanted to wave it because kind of like lahavdil in a casino, when someone wins, so they have the bells go off, they have the lights go off, because they want everyone else to see, wow, this is amazing. And they want other people to also, you know, pay for the slots, etc. So the idea is they would wave the gold so they would show others, look how this person gave such a nice donation, and that would hopefully inspire others as well. And this is also a very interesting halacha. There's a famous Rashba that has this question about when you give a donation, is it better to do it anonymous or is it better to have your name on it? So you could imagine that there are really arguments for, you know, both sides. That, you know, on the one hand, you know, we try to emulate Hashem and we try to emulate our leaders to be humble and to be tznius. Not everyone has to know how much I'm giving. So on the one hand, there's something that's definitely valuable about that. But the Rashba says, on the other hand, maybe if you put your name on it, maybe someone says, you know what, that person gave, I'll give too. You know, that person gave Chai Dauer, I'll also. So sometimes putting your name on it actually could inspire others to give. And I'm not going to go into when it should be anonymous, when it should have a name on it. But the idea is that based on this Ramban and what the Nesi'im missed out, is that giving and showing, doing things in public, if it's done for the right way, if it's not doing it to boast and say, oh, how great I am, I'm giving so much, but it's really, I'm doing it because I want to give and because I want to maybe inspire others to give, or maybe, you know, create a standard that it's appropriate to give to this institution, to this cause. So that's, of course, a positive thing. So I guess what I'm trying to bring out, you know, from this year is the theme of how the Mishkan and the donations of the Mishkan really bring out both sides of recognizing that people are watching. And I don't mean in like a paranoid way that we should like walk around life thinking that someone's always watching us and, you know, what's that person going to say? What's that person going to say? That's not a healthy way to live. But at the same time, to realize that people are watching us. We're part of a community where we want to inspire others. And I think that comes with both sides of it. On the one hand, to make sure it always looks kosher what we're doing, and no one could say, oh, that looks a little bit shady, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. And I think when it comes to the proactive giving and showing that I do want to do good things, I do want to give with the intention that maybe that will inspire others and create a culture of giving as well. And I just want to end with, of course, tonight being Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, and we have Purim coming up. And one of the main themes of Purim is really the ability to feel like a community and feel like we are connecting to each other as a community. As the famous pasuk that Haman says that the nation of Israel, we could destroy them because they're mufuzar umufurad bein ha'amim. They're separate, they're not one unit, so they should be easier to destroy. And of course, we have the Shkalim that we just read about in last week's parsha. I'm just going to say this source outside, and source Yud Beis, source 12, that Rish Lakish says, Hashem wanted us to give our Shkalim on Rosh Chodesh Adar so that our half shekel will come before Haman's shekel. So what was Haman's shekel? Haman's shekel was that he gave money to Achashverosh because he wanted to destroy us. So we come along and we give our half shekel, which of course represents the half shekel as opposed to the full shekel, represents that we are nothing, we are only half without each other, we're only half without the rest of Klal Yisrael, because we're saying to Haman, we're saying to Hashem, that we recognize that we're only half and that we need each other. We need to have a sense of oneness as Klal Yisrael. And in that way, we could be the healing before the Makkah, as the Gemara says, that we could have the Achdus before Haman could get to us, before Haman could say we could destroy them because they're so scattered, we give the half shekel to show that we do care about each other, we care about the sense of community. And of course, the mitzvah, Matanos Le'Avyonim, Mishlach Manos, it really is all about making sure that everyone's accounted for, everyone's taken care of on Purim to make sure they can enjoy and have true simcha. And as we're entering Adar Sheni, Mishnichnas Adar Marvin B'Simcha, I always like to say that simcha is really more of a mindset, and it's how we act. It's not always about a feeling, right? We can't always feel happy. We can't force emotions. We can't force ourselves to feel a certain way. But we could live a life that's meaningful and satisfying through the mitzvahs that we do, through the giving that we do, through feeling the sense of community and inspiring others and being a good model for others. And through that, that's where the simcha comes from. The simcha really comes from living a meaningful life and doing meaningful things. So we should all be zocha to develop this ability to inspire others, to have this sense of community, and all have a true sense of simcha. Mishnichas Adar Marim b'simcha. Everyone have a freilich in Rosh Chodesh and a freilich in Purim. You're welcome. Have a great night.